Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday, October 3rd afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Yes. Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Bish? Saltzman?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Good afternoon, Robert.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Very good. Thank you. Carla, we have one item on the agenda this afternoon. Could you please read it?
Yes. Item 1039, amend the seismic design requirements for existing buildings to require placards and tenant notification for unreinforced masonry buildings.
Colleagues, on June 13th, we passed resolution number 37364 after hearing staff updates and public testimony on retrofitting unreinforced masonry or URM buildings. Among other things, that resolution directed city staff to come back to the council within 3 months with an ordinance that does the following. First, requires URM buildings to put placards at the entrance of the building that says, quote, this is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in the event of a major earthquake, unquote. Number two, requires URM building owners to include the following language in their rental agreements. Quote, this building, which you are renting or leasing, is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings have proven to be unsafe in the event of an earthquake. Unquote. Number three, strengthens triggers for seismic retrofitting of URM buildings in the existing code. I will now turn this over to Commissioner Saltzman. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Earthquakes are our most likely disaster here in Portland. It is the event we train the most for. Over the last 5-10 years, the city has developed information on unreinforced masonry buildings. These are the buildings most likely to collapse in a serious earthquake. So we have a database of some 1,600 buildings of unreinforced masonry buildings in the city of Portland. For transparency's sake, it is our obligation to provide Portlanders this information and to respect their ability to make informed decisions and also to be aware of their surroundings. I also think of this as really an obligation to today's 10-year-olds, the generation that really hasn't been at the table at all during this debate. Today's 10-year-olds are the ones that will be living in unreinforced masonry buildings over the next 20 years until mandatory seismic retrofit standards kick in. So they're going to be, they along with a lot of older adults, are going to be the most at risk in the next 20 years. So giving Portlanders the placards I believe, helps build awareness of seismic risk, about what to do if you're in an unreinforced masonry building, which is to duck and cover, not to get out. And it also builds the demand, the market demand, for seismic improvements to these buildings. It was great that in June, the council unanimously directed staff to come up with a proposal to highlight unreinforced masonry's buildings in Portland through placards and tenant notification. And the mayor just read the language. This is what a placard would look like in real size and real font. This conversation has continued with many of you in the room and with others, and I think more and more people, Portlanders, are becoming aware of the risk of unreinforced masonry buildings and understand that regulatory actions are taking place and will continue to take place until these buildings are made safe. I do want to recognize some of the adjustments and things we've learned since that June hearing. And most importantly, recognize the impact placards could have on religious institutions in Portland. Throughout Portland's history, white men have led this city and imposed their priorities and mandates on the population of our city. And this has often come to the detriment of minority communities, and especially our black community. We must recognize this and apologize for those past actions. We are sorry. And part of that recognition is extending the timeline for the placard requirement for unreinforced masonry churches and nonprofits to 2 years, so that those communities and entities have the time to discuss the issue and to better understand the danger imposed by unreinforced masonry buildings and how they may work together to make sure that their parishioners or their attendees at their nonprofit institution are more aware of their surroundings and can work together to make those buildings safer. Another adjustment was recognizing that the city really needs to walk the talk here and model good behavior. And that is, in this ordinance, the city is the first out of the gate with the placards. So therefore, we have moved the timeline up for public buildings to just 2 months, January 1st, 2019. City buildings will have the placards that need to be placed on public buildings by the beginning of next year. I'm sorry, they will be placed on public buildings by the beginning of next year. And then the requirement for all other private buildings, private buildings, is March 1st, 2019. And as I said, for churches and nonprofits, it's into 2020. So I think beyond those points, I know we'll hear many arguments about why this is a bad idea. We'll hear the age-old Portland argument about not enough process. And we'll hear about insurance rates and property values. And we'll hear claims of endless demolitions and lost business. And I'll be blunt here, I don't buy it. We had 4 years of process, and with all of you here, word is out that something is happening. The insurance companies and the appraisers, they already know if you're in an unreinforced masonry building. And that is already loaded into their calculations. Customers are not going to stop shopping at their favorite store because of a placard. Concertgoers are not going to cancel their tickets because a placard is now outside the entrance to their favorite venue. These things are not going to happen. What will happen is that people may start asking why your building hasn't been retrofitted to withstand an earthquake. And to me, that's a very fair question to ask. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Commissioner Saltzman. So we now have a staff presentation. Nancy Thornton, Senior Code and Policy Analyst from BDS. I apologize. It's been a long day already. And Amit Kumar, Senior Engineer from BDS. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Amit is going to be doing the bulk of the presentation, so I'll let him start and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners.
Good afternoon.
My name is Amit Kumar, and I'm a Senior Structural Engineer with the Bureau of Development Services. And I'm joined by Nancy Thornton, Senior Code Policy Analyst at BDS, and Jonna Papaheftemiu, Planning Policy and Community Program Manager at PBAM.
Jonna, welcome. I'm sorry I didn't acknowledge your presence. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here today to provide an overview on the proposed ordinance requiring placarding and tenant notifications for unreinforced masonry buildings. As was mentioned before, in June 2018, the City Council directed city staff to return to Council within 3 months that would, one, require a placard on all URM buildings that have not been retrofitted to prevent collapse in an event of a major earthquake. Two, require all URM building owners to notify tenants or renters through rental agreements that the building is an unreinforced masonry building. And three, strengthen existing triggers in Title 2485 by closing some existing loopholes in the title. The first requirement is placarding of URM buildings. This ordinance would require a placard that is an 8-inch by 10-inch in a durable placard, lettering in a 50-point bold font, and with the placard to be posted on a conspicuous location at the exterior at the main entrance with the following message. This building is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in event of a major earthquake. The timeline for installing these placards, the original resolution required URM buildings to be posted with the placard by March 1, 2019. However, Council felt that the city should lead by example, so the requirement for placarding of public buildings was preponed to January 1, 2019. In addition, based on outreach to various constituents and with understanding the unique nature of services provided by nonprofits, including religious institutions, it was felt that these class of buildings be afforded additional time to place placards. They will now be required to place the placards on or before November 1 of 2020. All other buildings would have to post placards by March 1 of 2019. The second component of the ordinance is tenant notification. This requirement would require that building owners notify all existing tenants, and every new lease or rental agreement entered into or renewed must contain the statement that this building is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in event of a major earthquake. The timeline for notification into new lease or rental agreements is the same as that for placarding that we just talked about a little bit earlier.
Can I ask you a question? Because I want to make sure, I believe I've read a slight inconsistency here, and I want to make sure I've got this exactly right. This is the language that must be in the notification for existing tenants, the language right here, just to be clear. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I want to make sure that you did understand that. So there's two categories. If it's an existing tenant, we're not requiring it that they modify their leases, but they do have to inform the existing tenants.
Yeah, just been different language going around in recent days and weeks, and I want to make sure that we've all agreed this is the language we've settled on. Very good. Thank you.
In addition, owners would also be required to record an agreement with the county that they would maintain the placard and not remove it unless authorized by the city, and also an acknowledgement that they have complied with the tenant notification requirements that we discussed previously. Not all URM buildings will require the placard or tenant notification. The resolution required that buildings that have been fully retrofitted to prevent collapse in a major earthquake will not require placards. The ordinance defines what is meant by a major earthquake and what collapse prevention means by specifying the nationally recognized standards the retrofits need to meet. Essentially, any URM that underwent a full seismic upgrade in the past to the standards in effect at that time, which is since 1995, have been grandfathered in and will not require a placard or tenant notification. BDS is going to implement this plan. We are going to require that URM property owners will be notified by December 31, 2018 of the requirements for placarding and tenant notification, including any information on how to comply with the requirements and appeals and an enforcement process. BDS will host a website where URM owners can upload and record the agreement and pictures of the placard on the building. There's an appeals process in the ordinance where the owners may appeal the notice and placarding requirements if they believe that the building was incorrectly classified as a URM or it has been retrofitted to meet the standards to be exempt from placarding. Placarding and tenant notification will not be enforced until this appeal has been resolved. As far as enforcement is concerned, Portland Fire and Rescue will inspect the placement of placards as part of the regular commercial building inspection program and will work with BDS code enforcement in applying the requirements for placards. And BDS will use its existing code enforcement program and authority to enforce the requirements of placarding and tenant notification. And lastly, the third requirement in the ordinance is the strengthening of a couple of existing triggers for seismic upgrades related to re-roofs and cost triggers, and we are trying to close a few loopholes there to strengthen these requirements in 2485. So that's a quick overview of what the proposed ordinance is, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Commissioner Daly.
I'm sorry, could you go back over the appeals slide? Let's see. I just wanted to take note of this because we have heard from a number of URM building owners who feel that their buildings don't belong on the list that currently exists. And this is something that's come up in conversation in my office. If there are grades or ratings for URMs that have achieved like some level of seismic upgrade, maybe not the full level. So I just wanted to make sure that there's clarity on how this appeal would work.
Right. So if the building owners feel that, first of all, if the building is not a URM, there's been some question about that.
One, yeah.
Right. So the owners are welcome to submit an appeal that BDS would review. They would submit an appeal with any substantiating evidence that they have, like building plans that they have, or if they've done some inspections, an engineer has gone out and looked at it. BDS will review it. If we agree with that it is not a URM, their building will be taken out. If we need additional information, we'll ask for it. If we then decide that it is still considered a URM, then we would deny that appeal. Once that's denied, the building owner still has an ability to appeal to the Administrative Appeals Board at BDS with their evidence. And if still that is still not adequate, they can go to a building codes appeal, which is an administrative independent body that hears code appeals.
Okay.
So they have a three-step appeal process available.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I may have questions later. I frankly want to hear some of the public testimony.
Okay.
I'll probably have more questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you have more to present?
If you want to know any of the outreach or the enforcement, I'm happy to talk about that. Otherwise, if you have questions, that's fine too.
I have a few. So placarding is currently required in the state of California. What do they do in terms of enforcement there? And what do we know about? Has it increased the rate of seismic improvement or demolition? What can we learn, if anything, at this point from the California experience?
Okay.
So California's required placarding since the 1980s, but they didn't have a strong enforcement mechanism until the state law changed in 2004, where it was possible for individuals to take action to require the placarding. Some local jurisdictions have done that, but there's not a statewide enforcement mechanism. There are cities in California that do enforce, and anecdotally, you can quote city managers that have said they feel it's helpful in terms of informing the public. So, like in Portland, it's a land use matter, so it really goes city by city.
Some people have told me that they have a legitimate concern that they would lose customers and potentially lose revenue. What do we know from the California experience or anywhere else about the impact on revenues or customers or entry into buildings based on placarding?
I have searched everywhere to find a study that would prove or disprove that, and I've seen anecdotal statements that it hasn't reduced business. I haven't seen any studies or assertions that people have lost customers or lost tenants because of the placarding.
I think it would be helpful for us if we roll this out to, and that's been my experience as well. Frankly, it's been very, very difficult to get credible. There's nothing in the way of peer-reviewed studies or academic mm-hmm. studies or anything else, and therefore I think there's an opportunity here for us to take a lead on that. I have heard from a number of people who are very concerned they might lose their insurance or see their insurance rates go up due to placarding. Have you spoken with insurers on this particular issue?
The city obviously carries insurance, and we own 42 unreinforced masonry buildings ourselves. So we consulted with City Risk, and they asked our insurance broker to check with the insurance company. I believe that they submitted a letter to the record, which I don't have in front of me, but their feedback was that they did not anticipate property insurance going up at all due to the placarding, and that's primarily because the building construction method is something that insurance companies already consider when they issue the policy. The insurance company would not find out it's a URM because of the placard.
If I could read this letter into the record, I'd like to do it. It's from Willis Towers Watson. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this. The underwriters I spoke with were both small accounts, single building property owners, and large accounts like the City of Portland. We have never heard of an insurance company canceling, non-renewing, or declining to offer favorable insurance terms and pricing to an insured due to a placard. It is our opinion that having placarding requirements will have neither a negative or positive impact on the insurability or pricing of one's insurance. From an underwriting perspective, the risk profile does not change by placarding and notifying the public. But the reason I ask is there may be other academic sources out there. Again, I could not find one. And I called lots of people and burned out Google on that. What retrofit standard? How do you get rid of the placarding? You know, if I'm a building owner and I have the placard, what's it going to take for me to get rid of my placard?
Right.
Assuming I don't want it.
Right. So the way to get rid of the placard is to retrofit a building. And we have specified the standards it need to be retrofitted to, which is based on the American Society of Civil Engineers that define what collapse prevention means and what retrofits you need to do to prevent a collapse in a building. So those buildings that have already been retrofitted since 1995 to those standards, those are grandfathered in and they will not require a placard. But going forward, any building that is retrofitted to the standards that we have specified in the ordinance, you could then take the placard down.
There have been some questions that have been raised, and undoubtedly we'll hear some testimony from some people about the accuracy of the URM list. Could you tell us a little bit about how is that list compiled and what are we going to do going forward to ensure the accuracy of that list? You mentioned the appeal process, and that's great, but what are we doing proactively
right.
as the stewards of that list.
Right. So thank you for that question there, because I know there have been some concerns that have been raised about the accuracy of the database. So I'd like to clarify how this database was created. As this, you know, there seems to be some misconceptions about it, and that it was based on a windshield survey, thus implying that a level of casualness and therefore inaccuracy is associated with such a casual approach. While the database was created on a survey of buildings, it was not just a windshield survey. In the 1990s, over three summers from 1993 to 95, City of Portland undertook a task of creating a database of all commercial buildings in City of Portland. Trained city staff, in collaboration with Portland State University, visited all commercial buildings, quarter section by quarter section, block by block, and using procedures developed by the American Technology Council for visual examination, identified different building types, including the construction type, uses, number of stories, plan areas, observed deficiencies, etc. This survey was then coupled with the research of existing building records, permit history, Sanborn maps, and that's what was used to create a database of all commercial buildings in the City of Portland. And from that, we extracted all the buildings that were identified as URM buildings.
Okay.
But since in 2014, when at the direction of City Council to look into hazards posed by URM buildings, the first task BDS undertook was to verify and update this URM database. This review was done by a BDS structural engineer. Verification including using newer available technology like MapWorks, Google Maps, Street View, reviewing permit records, surveying building owners, and field visits where necessary. And based on this review, we removed buildings from the database that were demolished or were falsely identified as URMs. We identified buildings that were seismically upgraded and levels of upgrades done to these buildings. In all, we reviewed over 2,084 buildings and removed 131 buildings that were originally identified in the original as URMs, which were misidentified as URMs. We are fairly confident about the database, but of course we cannot guarantee that every single building in the database is accurate due to the inherent nature of identifying such buildings. In some cases where building data is not available, the only sure way to tell if a building is a URM bearing is by doing some destructive testing. And so that's why we have that appeals process that we talked about. We continue to update our database as more information is available, but given all the information that we have, we feel that our database is fairly accurate.
Okay, and one final question with regard to the database list. If I am a building owner, and I'm not, I wish I was, if I have a building and I am fairly sure that you have inaccurately included my building on your list of unreinforced masonry buildings, did I hear you correctly when you said, if I appeal this, I do not have to placard until my appeal is resolved? Is that correct?
That's correct. We'll look at all the appeals that are there, and until it's resolved, we would not enforce your placarding or tenant notification requirements.
And then finally, what is the process or the penalty associated with not complying?
Well, so the process basically will be that the fire marshal's office will go out to do their regular inspections. And then if it's a URM and there's no placard there, then their process is basically they give you notice in 40 days, and then they'll come back out and reinspect after 40 days. And if it still doesn't comply, then they'll issue a reinspection fee and turn it over to BDS. Then BDS would get it, and then our process would kick in with our enforcement group, and they would be given a letter and another 30 days to comply. And then, you know, so nothing would happen for at least 70 days.
So could I just ask a question? If this is a stupid question, I guess it would be in character with most of my questions. Why don't we, first of all, it sounds like you don't have the placard police. You're not going out there and looking for the, it's in conjunction with a regular fire life safety inspection. Why don't we just take some extra placards with us? We're not talking about an expensive item here. Why don't we just take them with us, and if somebody doesn't have a placard and they need a placard, the inspector can just hand them the placard right then and there, and they can attach it, as opposed to sending them letters and follow through and re-inspections and everything else. Why don't we try and make this easy?
Berkeley mailed self-stick steins to all their URM building owners. Yeah, so I think it's totally feasible.
Okay, good. Great, thank you. Those are all my questions for right now. I might have more after testimony. Anybody else? Commissioner Fritz?
I have an amendment request, and this actually speaks to Pastor Hennessy's letter asking for an education program that the nonprofits can tap into. My amendment would say, under the now therefore council directs, after A, amending the code of chapter 24.85, I would add a B. For city-owned reinforced masonry buildings, Bureau of Emergency Management staff will work in collaboration with the ADA Title II and Civil Rights Title VI Language Access Program staff in the Office of Equity and Human Rights to develop materials that provide reasonable and meaningful access to safety information for building occupants and visitors.
Second.
Commissioner Fritz moves her amendment. Commissioner Udaly seconds the amendment. That's on the table now and open for discussion.
And if I might just speak to it, the idea is, I think that the whole point of the placarding is to let people know about this. So for city-owned buildings, we have community centers, we have other Water Bureau buildings and others that we can give people a little pamphlet saying this is what this sign meant, this is what you should do wherever you are in an earthquake, this is just kind of what this is all about. And so it seems to me that it is on the city to develop that in appropriate languages, including Braille, and that we would make this available. And I'm hoping that we could make it available to community property owners as well as to city staff.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back up at the end, but thank you for your presentation.
Chief Myers?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we have an invited guest. Chief Myers is here. Thank you. Is there anybody? Good afternoon, Chief.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I didn't prepare any comments today. I wanted to make sure I was present in case you had questions regarding the enforcement. I wanted to make sure that I had an opportunity to at least be here for you. So if there are any questions for me, I'd be willing to entertain those.
Great. Not at the moment, but
okay.
Thank you. Obviously, in the last presentation, you supported this. I assume your opinion has not changed.
It has not changed.
Very good.
I can clarify if I need to, but I'd be remiss in my duty if we didn't at least announce the concern that we have for unreinforced masonry buildings. That is my priority as a city to provide a safe place to live, work, and play. So thank you.
Good. Thank you, sir. How many folks do we have signed up, Carla?
We have 22.
22. All right. Why don't we call up the first three? The microphones slide around. We find that about 6 inches is the right distance. If you get too close, they wig out. When you have 30 seconds left, you'll see a yellow light. When your time is up, the red light goes on. And as my colleagues know, I hate playing microphone cop. So please, when your time has expired, please stop, because there's lots and lots of other people who'd like to testify as well. Without further ado.
The first three, please come on up, are Reverend Roy Tate, Reverend Ed Mundane Jr., and the Reverend Matt Hennessy. And they'll be followed by Angie Even, Walt McMoneys, and Pippa Aaron.
Welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
It's good to see you. Thank you for your response to my letter, Commissioner Fritz. And I'm hoping that you all read it. When I listen, my mind goes to, since it's not a real big problem, then why are we here? It frightens me for our community, being that we've been displaced so many times and not invited. There's two things for sure you could count on about the African-American community and community policy and public policy usually, is that we are the first affected and the last informed. The disparities of this entire mandate is troublesome. I've outlined those reasons in a letter to you. And my only thought now is this. It's difficult for me as a pastor to receive grace in a sense that my constituents and my parishioners and those that I serve in community are not receiving. It's imperative that we understand the lessons that we learn about the power of non-inclusion. And it is also extremely important to me that our community understands that it has a voice. There are many people who will speak today and repeat much of the information that I could spew right now. But for me and my colleagues at the NAACP, my hope would be that our resolve would be as simple as starting the entire process again and asking those that are concerned in our communities to be able to raise their voices together. And the education module that Pastor Hennessy has prescribed all together and rise up together. My last thought is that when you stir from the bottom, everybody rises. Thank you for having us today, and I'm excited to hear the rest of the testimony, and I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Pastor Mondanay. We appreciate your presence. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Roy Tate, Christ Memorial Church. I appreciate, again, an opportunity to come before the council to speak and our voices be heard regarding this major issue. We consider it a major issue. We do not take it lightly. Number one, I want to make sure that we understand safety is a number one priority with us as well. Safety has always been, we preach it every Sunday, preach it every week about safety. And that's the number one thing. That being said, the concern is, again, the effects that it would have on the churches, mom-and-pop shops, small businesses, and individual and persons in that particular area. There's still a major concern, Mayor, and I think you did bring it up, that we're not clear about how do they go about getting this list. Again, at one time I saw the list, and then the next time I see another list, some names are not on there, some are on there, and it seems like it's not clear how this is happening, and people are wondering. I don't agree with you, Commissioner Salzman, that putting a placard on our church, putting it on, it will affect. It has an effect on our parishioners. It has an effect because they would be wondering, why is this happening? What's going on? What does this mean? And it makes them feel uncomfortable. It makes them feel like, do I really need to be here or should I go somewhere else? That's what we get. That's what we're going to hear. And that's what we have heard. Out of all of this, and I understand there's no, I haven't heard anything at all regarding dollars or monies that can be provided to help, perhaps maybe not at the city level, but perhaps maybe at the state level or maybe the federal level. But we haven't heard anything about that we're going to try to help, especially churches, religious organizations, mom and pop, who cannot afford to even do this type of work to their buildings. And number two, if we even did the work to the building, it's not going to make the building more classier. It's not going to make the building even better for as the cost of our property. It's not going to make it go up. We do not have any tax credits that we can use. All we rely on is our members of our congregation to give to help keep the church going. And so at the same time, we do appreciate the extending of the time that the religious organization have for the placard, but we still are concerned very much about having to put this on our buildings at this time. Thank you so much for hearing us today.
Thank you, Pastor Tate. I appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, and to the members of the City Commission. It's great to be here. For the record, my name is J.W. Matt Hennessy, the pastor of Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church. In addition to these wonderful pastors here, we have Bishop Tate and Bishop Irving, who are also with us today. I'd just like to borrow from some of the comments that I made in the note that you have before you. One, we do really recognize that in every major policy issue we deal with in the city of Portland, particularly as it relates to almost anything, quite frankly, there is this concern always for a continued area of disparity. And so therefore we echo the comments that Pastor Mondanay and the NAACP have made. And I would like to ask just that when we finished the Williams Avenue work, we said here again was one of those issues, and we want to make sure that we do everything we can not to repeat leaving people out of the process. And so we would ask you just to keep that in mind. Secondly, we recognize that it's important to be constructive. We are where we are right now. And we want to thank you, Mr. Mayor, you, Commissioner Salzman, you, Commissioner Fritz, and you, Commissioner Udaly, and certainly in his absence, Commissioner Fish, for hearing from us and having your staffs work with us as we sort through this process. Again, not just concerned about African-American churches, but all churches and all nonprofits as well. So therefore, there are some things that are important to us as we support the recommendation that's being made today, and that is the educational process, because we do need people to really understand. Secondly, we really I thank you for the updated list. We have that now. Number three, the range issue of what buildings can withstand, the technical team that will be deployed so that we can work with them along with a facilitator, and also work with us and several nonprofits about the possibility of us being shelters, and then work together on the funding mechanisms, engaging as many options as possible. We don't know, any of us, what happens 20 years from now, but what we do know is we have a serious issue on our hands, and we stand ready to work with you to help make this whole process work. Finally, we want to thank, first of all, I'm grateful for our new fire chief. I've not met him before, but I realize he and I go to the same barber, and it's always good to see people like him around. But we're really grateful for Elizabeth, for Matt, for Jonna, and for Nancy and Amet, and many others that we probably don't know who've been working on this, and we just look forward to working together with you on it.
Thank you.
Now, by the way, I'm one who likes to stay to the end. This is Wednesday, Bible study day, so I know that I can't stay the whole time, but there are other people who do Bible study on other days. Yeah. But Wednesday's my day.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Angie Even, Walt McMoneys, and Pippa Arend. And they'll be followed by Mira McLaughlin, Jim Brumberg, and Reverend Marcus Irving.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Glasses. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name's Angie Even. I'm here today to ask you to change course and invest in a meaningful citywide education and awareness campaign, to follow the policy committee's recommendations, to not stigmatize people's homes, small businesses, churches, and schools. Through 4 years of committee work, countless publications, and FEMA, we know that URMs are just one of three classifications of building types in Portland that are vulnerable, more vulnerable to earthquakes. Also, soil and liquefaction equalizes all structures. New buildings, sky rises, houses, bridges, fuel tanks built in liquefaction zones all heed equal warning. What about the Burnside Bridge? In 10 plus years and $500 million, it may be upgraded. Yet Saturday market and homeless programs take place under the bridge, and there is no evidence that the city has concern to warn. To placard one building type is the equivalent to spot zoning. It's a false narrative designed to deter business, patrons, tenants, and buyers while creating insurance and finance roadblocks. On June 13th, Commissioner Saltzman, you stated that Portland was copying the San Francisco ordinance and that therefore our concerns would be unfounded. I called San Francisco and I have an email from the building code manager. San Francisco does not have or has never had a placard or disclosure ordinance to unfairly tag in code buildings as unsafe. Have you considered, at a time when the city expects us to raise funds to retrofit, why would you put policies in place to discourage renters, devalue buildings, and harm small businesses? Have you considered that these policies will act as a waiver? That instead of protecting people more, you will protect them less through insurance companies denying claims? So since we're inventing our own wheel and no one has been notified, I urge you to slow down, pause, answer our concerns, include us in a conversation, and do things with us instead of to us. I urge you to charge the new work groups with this discussion to apply equal due diligence for all buildings and to recognize that minorities also own for-profit buildings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Walt McMonies, 601 Southwest 2nd Avenue, Suite 2100, Portland. I'm here representing myself as an owner of three URM or designated URM buildings and also the Masonry Building Owners of Oregon, which is a group of building owners that have been concerned and been involved in the process over the last 4 years. Let's see, I did something strange to my chair, so I'm even shorter than usual. I think I'm going to stand up. Policy committee felt that I was on the policy committee.
Walt, I think it's fixed now.
Oh, you got it up there. Great. Whoa.
Is that better? Yeah, there you go.
I served on the policy.
I can see you.
You can see me. My best features. My policy committee service makes me feel concerned that the statements have been made that the policy committee came down in favor of negative placarding. And I don't think the policy committee spent a ton of time on placarding, but it was basically perceived to be an onerous thing that we didn't want to use on anybody who wasn't a scofflaw. So we certainly didn't propose front-end, punitive or negative placarding. As to San Francisco's program, I did call down there, did some Google searches and found that they have the soft story program. And the notification they're using on the soft story program is very different from the one that is being proposed for Portland. It seems to me it's less pejorative, less accusatory. It just says you're in violation. This property is in violation of such and such city ordinance. It doesn't say, you know, the building's going to fall down and kill you. I do think placarding elicits an immediate and very negative response from tenants. Round Hill Pacific, that owns a building across from one of my buildings, discovered that there was an article in the Northwest Examiner about this whole situation, and it showed a picture of the building with a banner that said, "This is an unsafe building." And there were an unbelievable number of tenants called up, some high percentage within the building. So it is something that elicits a scare response among people. And that's one thing I liked about the San Francisco placarding ordinance. It gave a number to call for further information, whereas the one we're using doesn't do anything other than you're proposing to use it, doesn't do anything other than saying it's a dangerous building. Then on to some things I didn't cover in my written testimony, which I did send in. The URM list, I've been misquoted as denigrating what BDS did. I don't feel that way at all. I think they did a very good job of getting a raw number of what were the probable likely URMs in the city of Portland. But this all is derived from FEMA publication 154, and it is fairly clear that that's not to pick out individual buildings. You need to do the invasive testing to find out if the building is really a URM. The upgrade standard of life safety is what you're stuck with if you have a placarded building. But if you don't have a placarded building to go going in, you only have to comply with, simply under the proposal, with collapse risk reduction. let's see, deferring. That's pretty much what I wanted to say. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Pippa Arendt. My goal here is to encourage you to not placard my home, my building. Why? I need a chance to succeed. Going on this idea of San Francisco placarding, they placard only after noncompliance, not preemptively. So they give the buildings a chance to succeed, and I need a chance to succeed. This list, as you know, is published only in 2016, and I've never received one single outreach from the city of Portland, only through other building owners. So most building owners still don't know, and these building owners need a chance to succeed before you preemptively do more punitive damage to their buildings, to their businesses. We also know, as Angie was saying, that there's other buildings, as per your own website, that are equally as dangerous. And so we know that targeting only a few is strategically sort of nonsensical. It's illogical and it's punitive. Also, we know that liquefaction matters, sometimes more than structure. And we can look at things like tsunami zones at the coast, where they don't put a tsunami warning on a building. They put it on the area. That would make sense here. It's an earthquake liquefaction zone area warning as opposed to the specific building, because it may not matter what it's made out of. I really personally want to succeed. As some of you know, I actually did a refi about 2 years ago to do some of the retrofits, to do roof to walls. I immediately stopped when I heard about this mandate because I saw that I was potentially being fiscally, you know, overrun, that my building was potentially being totaled with the potential mandate that's still out there. It's been, when I saw the Indonesian earthquake this last weekend, I was sort of mortified and really scared and very frustrated with the city that I had to stop the retrofit actions that I was taking because of the potential fiscal nightmare that this potential mandate and the placarding, which is on top of this, adds to my personal situation. I want to live in a city where small building owners and local housing owners, such as myself, are encouraged and supported, as we provide the historically low-cost shelter for families and creatives and startups. And I can succeed with your help. And what that looks like is simply incentivizing the current code, and don't punitively placard my building or other people's. We know these placards aren't about safety. Otherwise, you'd simply placard the high-risk zones and the other buildings that are also equally as dangerous. We know these placards aren't about choice, or else you'd open enrollment for the schools when you placard those on January 1st. You say that this has been a long process, Commissioner Saltzman, but I haven't been really included in that, and a lot of people also haven't. So if, indeed, you want to move forward with placards, which I think are nonsensical, please put them in the committee.
Thank you.
The next three are Mira McLaughlin, Jim Brunberg, and Reverend Marcus Irving. And they'll be followed by Roger C. Jones, Nathaniel Brown, and Kathy Rogers.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. Jim, do you want to start?
In this order?
Yeah, okay. I tend to just go the same direction. That way I don't lose track.
Okay. Thank you for hearing this and from hearing for the public from the public. Dan, I know Mr. Saltzman, I'm not sure how to address you, but I appreciate the work that you've done for public safety. And I know that it's frustrating. I know you're frustrated and that this is a seemingly long process. But as many people are going to attest to today, due process is key. I'll read my letter. These buildings are the heart of Portland, or a big part of it, and it's what makes us great. And the heart in there is nonprofits, many of the people in the faith community that I'm proud to be sitting here with today. They're music venues. These are the places where the stories of Portland come from and that make Portland great, many of them. And despite what the developers and their interests will tell you, the diminished value to these buildings that will result from placarding is very real. And I've talked to a lot of people about it, done my research. I actually don't own an URM, to my knowledge. I wouldn't know if I did, because there hasn't been any notice directly to building owners, but I own Revolution Hall and Mississippi Studios, which are both completely up to code. But some of my favorite places that I won't name, because they may or may not be on the list, are part of this. It's a very real thing, this diminished value, and a placard that declares that a building is unsafe is going to put a downward pressure on leases and rents, as has already been pointed out, and on the curb value, the curb appeal. When people go to refinance their building, the appraisal is based on curb appeal, as I'm sure you know. This makes it harder for the real work that I know that you all care about to be done. We all want the buildings to be safer. I want to see brick buildings be safer. I spoke with Patrick Odolini. He was the citywide, he was the head of the Resiliency Planning Commission for San Francisco, which is a 30-year comprehensive plan for the entire city. And as a small part of this program, San Francisco used some placarding here and there as an incentive, and in a few cases as a threat to non-complying businesses and non-complying property owners. But here's what he said about placarding on its own. Quote, "It's a cop-out. Just look at Napa. They placarded only, and then many of those buildings fell in the earthquake of 2014. End quote. So if placarding is to happen at all, it's only effective if it's part of a comprehensive program that takes time and process. New seismic rules, incentives, reasonable timelines, administrative assistance to help identify specialized loan products and other financial instruments. It's a way of rewarding the most responsible folk, not a way of punishing the most vulnerable ones. So I know you're trying to do the right thing. I've supported all five of you, and Nick in his absence. I'm very happy about our city council, but I know that we can do better. Dan, I promise that your legacy of public safety, education, and issues of human compassion stands tall without this particular footnote. Let's pull it together. Let's make a big plan for the big quake. It is coming, we admit, and most building owners want to do the right thing. Beneficial Bank, I have 30 more seconds, if I may. Is that my warning? Is that...
Make it fast.
I will make it super fast.
Everybody else will ask for 30
beneficial
seconds.
Bank, beneficial
Bank. The answer will be no for everybody else, just so you know. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'll be 10 seconds. Beneficial Bank wants to help. Umpqua Bank wants to help. Placarding alone will cause lawsuits to the city. I'm not an owner. I'm not. This is not in any way a threat of lawsuit, but I am submitting for the record a legal letter from Professor Michael Blum, who is a 40-year, I'm sorry, property law professor at Lewis and Clark College, who has looked at all of what you guys are talking about and has determined that there will be successful lawsuits against the city that will further embroil us all in a quagmire that will keep the real work for safety from getting done. And I hate to end on that note, but thank you for your time.
No, that's good testimony. If I could just give a slightly broader context to this. Today we're here talking about placarding, but I just want to remind everybody how we got here. And the reason we got here is we started with the more comprehensive strategy that Mr. Odolini had suggested. We started with seismic requirements. And we had a whole series of seismic, different requirements for different types of facilities, different uses. And that has been a tried and true methodology in cities all around the world. And what we heard from people was two major themes. Number one, give us time. Give us time to be able to do that, to finance it, to figure out how we can afford to do that. And so we extended the timelines significantly. I think we're out to 30 years now. The second thing we heard was give us financial help for those of us who can't do it, especially if we're a nonprofit, if we're part of the faith community. Don't penalize us. Team up with us, and let's go down to Salem together and see if we could shake the tree. And until we have sources of identified support for building owners, don't enforce. That was effectively the conversation. The compromise was we've got to do something in the near term. We can't do nothing. As the editorial said this morning, we've got to start somewhere. And we had many of us who were engaged. Not everybody here obviously was engaged, but the placard started off being pretty strong in its language. And now it states what a lot of people think is just an obvious statement of fact.
Well, it sounds like a great idea to educate the public.
Here's where I'm going with this. We're already talking about the compromise. We're here today taking testimony on what's already the compromise away from what other cities have done, which is simply say, here's the standards, and within X time period, you're going to meet the standard or you're going to be out of code. And so I just want to make sure that we have that broader context on the table here, and that, because I feel a little like we're negotiating against ourselves here in some regards. Commissioner Fritz.
Thanks, Mayor. I think the third thing that I heard in the